Hey, this is Brandon Crawford from the San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, April 10th, 2017, and this is episode 118 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host tonight, Chad King, and we got a little duet going tonight. Me and this guy from Florida. Got a thing going on. Eric, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Still watching baseball. It's been one of those long Mondays, but it's good to wrap it up talking about the Giants after a victory in their home opener today.
Yeah, the good thing about Eric is, you know, even though he's on the East Coast, he's a gamer for going past midnight Eastern time. So thank God we have a night owl on the podcast.
The Cubs-Dodgers is still going. They got rain delayed by like an hour and a half, and I got to watch the banner raising, you know, the other half. She's a Cubs fan, and, you know, I'm sure all my friends were watching from back home crying. And it's cool to watch a team raise a championship banner. You know, it's always fun, and to see it at Wrigley Field and to see the trophy there was something I never thought I'd see before. So tonight was, you know, worst day enough for to see all that. I've been watching people on Twitter bitch about how late things are going, but who cares? You know, flags fly. Excuse me, flags fly forever, and you only get to raise them once. So let the Cubs have fun for a night.
Yeah, ironically, I have a friend that is an adopted Cubs fan. I would say I think he grew up a Padres fan, but he lives in Chicago now. And he was Facebooking that basically the championship banner ceremony was going to take another 108 years. So he was getting a little perturbed by it. So I think that's a sign of not really a true fan. Because you're right. I mean, the first, the second, and even the third time the Giants raised the banner, I was glued to my set. You know what I mean? Glued to my set. And actually, I went to the ring ceremony for after 2014, you know, in the 2015
season. Right, the 2015 opener, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I was there that day with the confetti and the banners and the rings getting passed out, and Bruce Bochy's ring was up in the press box. So we all got to take pictures of it and check it out and everything like that with the Tiffany rep close by. But yeah, I'm all for that. You know, not a fan of the Cubs, but a fan for a team or a fan base that has suffered longer than any other team in Major League history. So good for them. This is the only time, shouldn't say the only time, the first time, maybe the only time, that these people get to see something like this. So,
well, I thought it was fun because it really reminded me of 2011. Because for our lifetime, it's the same thing for Cubs fans of our age. It's the same thing.
Yeah, and if it really you have one in your lifetime, it doesn't matter if it's 108 years or 40 years or 20 years, right?
So, however long you've been alive, that's what it is. But I flash back to like 2011 and watching it for the first time. Those guys that raised it and stuff like that, and brought back, you know, all the feels and why, you know, every season we watch all these games to see who's gonna, you know, be standing in October.
No, it's good for them. So maybe they'll pull it up. Yeah. Well, the Giants started out 1-5. That was,
oh man, it was ugly.
What the hell happened, man? I mean, we talked about, you know, our first regular season podcast, which was our actual season preview. They had already lost the first game. It was a rough game, you know. Melanson blew the save in the ninth, and it was what it was, and we just kind of moved on. Mad Bum hit his two home runs, and we said, okay, everything's going to be fine. And then they won the next day, and we're saying, hey, yeah, see, no problems. Cueto came to the rescue. They won. Then they lost four in a row. And some in just stupid fashion again. You know, another blown save mixed in there, blowing leads, stranding runners on second. I mean, it just, in a lot of those games, in fact, five out of their five losses, they have five losses right now, four of them, they had the lead in. So, I mean, it's a little frustrating. It doesn't mean it was always the bullpen. It could have been the starter that gave up the lead. But it's been a frustrating start to the season because they've started to turn things around. They've won the last two. They closed out San Diego, avoiding the sweep with a strong effort from Cueto again, who up till then only had both of the Giants' wins. And then, of course, a great strong outing from Matt Moore today in the home opener, winning 4-1. So they've won two in a row. They're 3-5. It's not all doom and gloom, but I'd say a couple bounces here and there, not a blown save here, an extra hit there, and they easily, you know, could have been 5-3, almost even 6-2, to be honest. That's how close some of these games were on paper. It really came down to one mistake, but that's what makes or breaks a playoff team, right? So I mean, these are the mistakes that they need to stop making right now, because the last thing you want to do is play under 500 in the first month and find yourself looking, you know, 7-8 games up in the standings.
Well, it's funny because at the end of the year, you know, we always talk about these stats, like how did the Giants fare in one-run games? And they're 0-3 on the season already. And they weren't all like one runs. One was a 7-6. I mean, they were, but one was a 7-6 game. Mm-hmm. The other one was Bumgarner pitching the great game on Saturday and then them squeaking one across in the ninth but not finishing the job. And all their wins have been like by 2, 3, and 4 runs. So they haven't gotten blown out. You're right. The record could be absolutely flipped around. It's the bullpen's blown something like 6 leads or something, 7 leads.
Yeah, and they're not always save opportunities because of the time it happens in the game, but they've blown a lot of leads so far. And when, again, you lose 4 games out of your 5 losses are games in which you had leads, there you go. Those are a bunch of blown leads right there. So it's frustrating. Yeah, it's one thing if you fall behind 5-2 and you lose 6-3 or something, you kind of go, well, they would have, you know, they were never in position to win that game. But these games, they have been in position.
We talked about it last week, how just after the opener, how it was like a copy of how the season went down last year. And then they did it again and again and again. It was kind of frustrating. But like, I'm inclined to believe, I don't know, it's funny, I'm kind of positive about it. Like, people have to find their roles.
Yeah.
We don't have the core guys anymore. It's going to be a whole new experience with this bullpen. And they're all just going to have to settle in together, and there's going to be bumps, and there's definitely going to be different guys in that bullpen come June, July, August. You know, it's going to shake itself out. It's not the death knell for the season. It's not going to be the reason that they don't win whatever, you know, the division, wild card, anything like that. I don't think it's a death knell. Left field might be a death knell, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure the bullpen is.
Yeah, that's what Bochy said a couple of days ago. He said, hey, the bullpen's going to sort itself out. Basically, it's kind of like natural selection. You know, these guys are going to have to find their roles, and the strong will survive. And so the ones that have the intestinal fortitude to hold those leads or preserve those tie games, those are the guys that are going to find themselves in the 7th and 8th innings. And that's what we need, because no one, again, similar to last year, the second half of last year, it's only 8 games in, get it, small sample size, but it just already feels like no one's assuming those roles and no one seems to have that confidence. And there are certain times, you know, during the year where you're very confident in your pitchers, and for the last 6 months of baseball the Giants have played, including the second half last year, you don't know what you're going to get with any bullpen guy that goes out there.
Funny.
You don't know.
Guys like Contos will go out there and they'll put up 1-2 times. They'll miss bats completely. They'll get the ground ball outs they need. And then he goes out, you know, the next time and he gets his ass handed to him.
Well, against San Diego, you know, he got tagged with that, you know, that 3-run home run, right? When they had the lead after the dramatic Brandon Belt Grand Slam, which put him ahead. I mean, that was the bench was fired up. Hunter Pence was dancing and pumping his fist. I mean, it was a great atmosphere. They get the lead, 5-4, and then Contos goes right out and gives up a 3-run jack, and they suddenly are down 7-5. And the thing is, like you said, he could be all or nothing. Before that outing, he had struck out 9 of the previous 10 batters.
Right.
So Bochy was going with the hot hand, and I don't fault him for doing that. He struck out 9 out of 10 batters. You can't fault that logic. It just didn't work out. It was a walk, a hit, and then a jack. So
this could totally just end up being cluster logic, you know, that by the end of the season we see how certain things get clustered together. They may go, you know, two straight weeks without having the bullpen blow games like they had over the stretch of the first week of the season.
Yeah,
that's the nice thing about it, because they've looked like a different team. They've won in different ways already. You know, the offense has been clicking and things like that. So they can overcome it if they really want to, because today was a prime example.
I was going to say, a good segue into today's game, yeah.
Yeah, they literally they scored three runs on the greatest play I've ever seen, like one of the greatest plays. And most Giants fans, I'm sure, seen it. And if you haven't by now, the video of Matt Moore hitting the ball 40 feet and the Diamondbacks just throwing it over the plate to who they're trying to throw it to two different times and getting three runs to score. It's just it was unbelievable, but they made that work. Like, Matt Moore went out. He said, forget the bullpen. He didn't have to worry about it. Melanson let off a leadoff double, but he immediately got through it. You know, it was a three-run lead. The guy's second didn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
It was really quite impressive that they were able to win a game where, like, the offense didn't have to absolutely click, and the bullpen wasn't even a factor. The bullpen hasn't been a factor, like, really the last 3 days between Bumgarner, Cueto, and Moore.
Yeah, it's I'm going to try to remember to insert that here in the podcast if I have time to do that. That was a great call.
Oh, my God. It was so fun.
Yeah, and Eric and I were talking in the pre-show, and I had an extremely busy day at work. I was in the field, and I was coaching softball tonight. So, unfortunately, I did not get to see the game. I listened to a little bit on my drive, heard the replay, but just saw that play. And it's freaking hilarious. I just Matty Moore swings, hits it about 30 feet or so. What's his face? Pitcher jumps off the mound, throws it away, two runs score, and then Parker's hustling around third. And actually, they threw it to try and get the second runner. Catcher threw back to the pitcher, and of course, boom, that happens. Misses it again, and then they throw back home to where the pitcher's covering, and Parker just gets in with an idiotic head first slide into home plate, and three runs scored on a ball that was hit 30 feet. It's pretty fantastic.
I laughed as it was happening. I was watching it unfold, and I was like, no. Oh, my God, that's you know, I kept laughing hours later. I explained it to my neighbor, and I broke up laughing while I was describing it. I started telling the handyman. It was just so funny. Like, it was one of those things. You see something new every day, and, like, I very well may have seen that in a Little League game, but I had never seen that in a big league game before. It was embarrassing. It really was.
It really did remind me of my 7-year-olds that I coach. It really did. But hey, grown men, you know, it happens, right? Yeah. We all have our bad days.
And it's Taijuan Walker was right there, the big tree trunk of a man standing at home plate.
Yeah,
at the end of it. And earlier in the game, we didn't even touch on it. Buster Posey went down because he got hit in the head with a 95-mile-an-hour fastball from Walker. And it like hit the top back part of the helmet. For those that may not have, I'm sure everybody's seen it by now. I gotta stop doing that. And it glanced off, and Buster sat there for a minute and almost tried to look cool. He tugged on his helmet, but I'm a little concerned because he was yanked, and it's precautionary and everything like that. But that's tough for the number four hitter, the catcher, all that for the Giants to take right now.
Yeah, I saw that replay right before the podcast as well. That's your suggestion, and yeah, you're right. I mean, the first 3 seconds, you kind of immediately assume he's okay because he kind of nodded, pulled down his helmet, told the trainer, basically, I'm okay. But then you see him kind of stretch his face, do that, like, oh, with his mouth and kind of, you know, pop his eyes, kind of like he's trying to snap out of it. And you just kind of see him stare off in the distance. He's not even making eye contact with the trainer who's talking to him. It was a little concerning. I mean, after he was interviewed and he said he was fine and it's all precautionary, he's going to be evaluated tomorrow. I think Eric and I totally agree. There's no way in the world he's playing tomorrow. Not even a chance in hell. And to be quite frank, probably not even Wednesday, even if nothing is wrong, because they've already learned with Brandon Belt and Joe Panik that these concussion symptoms don't necessarily manifest themselves within 24 or 48 hours. They can manifest much later than that, and even when they go away, they can come back a week later, which has happened to both Panik and Belt, where they felt fine for a few days, and then suddenly they were that couldn't even get out of bed, or they were hit with vertigo, or they had nausea, or they had intense headaches. You know, I talked to Belt about it a little bit, and it was scary for him. You know what happened a couple of years ago. So the Giants are very, very well aware of the situation and the delicate nature of head injuries. And of course, with a superstar, you got to take your time to evaluate, especially like you said earlier, at the catcher position, because if he has any susceptibility to a secondary strike, obviously the catcher is at primary risk of that over any other position player. All it takes is a foul ball off the noggin, and that's it. He's suddenly out for the year. So yeah, they got to be real careful with this.
Well, they have that 7-day DL now for concussions.
Right.
And I'll be honest, I'm totally fine if he goes on it. I really am.
Yeah,
me too. It's April 10th. You know, I'd rather he's healthy now and they take care of it. You know, during this early stretch, and it's kind of the theme carrying over, but during this early stretch, it's, you know, the talk has been, you know, you'd rather finish strong, you know, because the Giants have. They've jumped out to really quick starts the last couple of years, and then they petered out. So maybe this is the year to, you know, kind of start off crappy and finish strong.
Come on,
so
strong, right.
Right, right. So you'd rather that Buster, you know, get his rest now and make sure he's safe and, you know, in a cocoon so that you don't have to – he doesn't have to get those everyday nicks and things like that. I'd totally be good with him going out for a week. I'm fine with Nick Hundley and Tim Fedorovich for a little bit. If Trevor Brown is healthy enough to come back instead of Fedorovich, I'd be fine with that as well. Mm-hmm. Hundley seems to have a good rapport with the guys. Apparently he's Melanson, and he were on the same college team. They mentioned that today. So it was interesting that he's thrown to his college catcher. Hundley's a proven, you know, veteran backup. He'll be fine handling it for a little bit. If they need to sit Buster down, for the sake of the season, I'd be fine with it. And if that 7 lasted 10 to 14 days, it's okay, you know, because I know the games in April mean as much in September, but you'd rather win 10 in a row in September than 10 in a row in April.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I think they need to give him at least a few days off, even if he doesn't have any symptoms. You just never know. You don't want to risk him getting a foul ball and then suddenly he's set back even further because something you didn't detect before. All right, so there were two major things that I think fans and the critics were worried about going into this year. Number one was the bullpen. Clearly 32 or 33 blown saves last year was the primary concern. And they addressed that for at least a good portion of that with your closer. And Mark Melanson, he's definitely not been rock solid yet. He blew his first save, and his second opportunity, which was his first save in San Diego, was really dicey. He put two runners on, and the winning run was at the plate, and he got the double play yesterday. And then today, like you said, it was a double, so whatever. Yeah. It was a three-run lead, so that didn't really matter. So,
and it was a hot shot off of Nunez's glove, too.
Yeah, so at least he's progressing in the right direction. He's gone from blown save to Brian Wilson-type save to just a pedestrian save. So maybe he'll continue on that trajectory and be okay. So I'm not too worried about Melanson right now. But the rest of the bullpen, of course, so far, as we mentioned at the top of the show, has been a huge concern. With some stats here we'll read out, but also with the fact that they've blown leads in four of their five losses. Second to that, of course, is left field. And we were all just crying to the moon. You guys need to sign a bat. You need to find someone out there. Now, I know that's easier said than done. You had guys like Cespedes and others that, you know, even if it was a reality, it would have broke the bank for the Giants. But that being said, the Giants are a very profitable franchise. And so it wouldn't have been a stretch, I would say, to have signed someone like that. But instead, they deferred to use that money just for the closer, and they decided we're just going to bring up Parker and Williamson and others and let them fight it out. And so you have Spring, you have Marrero, you have Parker, you have Williamson, you have Morse, you have a few others, and Morse looked good for a little bit, but he got hurt, so he's down in AAA. So they ended up going with Marrero, who led the team in home runs, tied for the major league lead with 8. And now he's like 1 for 12 or something like that. And
yeah.
Of course, Parker makes the team.
Parker.
So far, you add up all the left field at bats in the first eight games. The Giants are worst, not in the National League, but both leagues, in the major leagues. By far, by almost 100 points, they're batting 069, 2 for 29 with 12 Ks. They're both singles, and they have two RBIs. So
yeah, they didn't get
immediately, it's a concern.
Six games, they didn't get a hit from the left field position the first six games
and
of the season.
And that's the thing, the first two hits were yesterday and today.
Yeah.
So it's been just a historic drought. It's bad. Again, any position can go through this kind of stretch of eight games with an average this low. It's just that they're under the microscope, put it that way. The pen and left field are under a microscope. So if you're hitting 250 most of the year and you hit 069 for a week, not too many people are going to notice. You start out the year like this and everyone notices, especially like you said, hitless in the first six games. And that's unacceptable. You can't have a position going hitless in six games.
I got to be honest, it's not even that too, though. It's watching some of these at bats. Like, we've already got Aaron Hill out in left field just to get some better swings if needed.
Right.
Some of these at bats, and Marrero's killing me already. I mean, he had an at bat late in the game today where he swung at the off speed pitch that was in the bottom half of the zone and dropped out. Then he took the fastball right down the middle of the plate, and then he swung at the breaking pitch that dropped out of the bottom of the zone again. And it's just he looks overmatched. He doesn't seem to adjust. He likes to swing for the fences at least once or twice in at bat, mm-hmm. and it doesn't seem to be changing. It's like really, it's really tough to see that. Right now, it's really tough to see that Marrero and Parker platoon is the answer. Parker, too. He finally got his first hit today. Crawford went nuts in the dugout because, I mean, Parker finally got a hit. They showed it. Crawford was giving Parker crap from the dugout and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's the same thing we talked about last week. Parker doesn't make adjustments. You know, so maybe one of these guys they signed can fill in at the left field spot.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Who would have thought the Giants would have signed Melvin Upton and Drew
right?
Stubbs after all of the people they had in camp and all the concerns they had, you know? But you got to look at it this way. They're desperate. They're looking for a platoon buddy, if you will, because of Marrero already looks pretty weak. Melvin Upton at least brings you experience and speed and above
power.
Above average defense. Well, I would say, you know, he has power. Marrero has power. You know, these guys. I'm not saying he has more or less.
Well,
but he
Upton
does have
hit 20 home runs last year. Nobody on the Giants did 20 home runs.
That's a really, really, really good point. Yeah, I mean, he strikes out a ton, but so is Marrero. Yeah. No, it's bad.
So
it's bad. So they're looking at any possibility. If the guy's a career 243 hitter, he's on the backside of his career, but he still has above average defense. He has good speed. And yeah, he has the power, and his splits against righties and lefties aren't too crazy, where he could actually take over for some starts over for Parker if he continues this horrific slump and Upton actually ends up getting called up. They also signed Drew Stubbs, and he's an interesting guy because, you know, he was the fifth person in Major League history to strike out over 200 times back in 2011, I believe, and now it's becoming a much more common occurrence. He's 32 or 34, I can't remember. But again, a career 230 hitter. He's got 93 career jacks. He definitely has a lot of power, but almost all that power is against left-handers. So he would be more of an exclusive platooner kind of guy. He would never face righties.
What's with all these strikeout guys? You know what I mean? It's weird because the Giants are not really a heavy strikeout team. They're pretty good contact team. But it seems like the leftover bin of left fielders the left field.
Yeah.
No.
I always thought of it like it's like a lost and found bin, you know?
Yeah.
They're just like some team left their left fielder in the box, and the Giants are like, oh, we'll take it.
Right.
It's not
$500,000 to Melvin Upton Jr. when he's already getting paid millions of dollars by the Padres and Braves?
Oh, I don't know if it's the Braves, Orioles, whoever it was. Yeah, you know, the Giants, this shows how desperate they are, clearly. They don't have any other options right now. And so they're just trying something out. And I guarantee you that one, if not both of these guys, are going to be called up here within 30 days. It's going to happen. And
they did it with Ugla back in the day. And
if they did it with Ugla, they're going to do it with Upton. Oh, it's... boy. I don't think anything will be as bad as that, the Ugla episode. The short 7-day tenure with him.
They have to bring them up, too, because they have to see if they'll contribute. Because, honestly, the Giants don't want to clog their farm system with guys like Stubbs and Upton and even Michael Morse, because they want their younger guys to have the freedom to play. Mm-hmm. So they have to bring these guys up and get looks at them. And, like, say somebody like Upton comes up and takes the job. You know, Drew Stubbs might be released. Michael – not Michael Morse. Well, I mean, maybe. But, you know, guys like that, they may be released.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I don't know what the Upton deal is, except for the half a mil. But for Stubbs, he's going to get paid $130,000 right now for the minor league deal. If he gets called up to the big leagues, he gets $1 million from the Giants. So for the Giants, I'm not saying that's a ton of money for them, but there is a financial consideration. You know, it's like, okay, well, it's another $1 million we got to throw out there if we call this guy up for like 10 at-bats. Do we really want to do that? I don't know the Upton situation, though. It could be similar to that. I don't know.
No, I think it's just a flat 500K.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, I think it is, and I think that's the whole flyer on him. Because he's getting $1 million from the Blue Jays, and then he's getting a ton of money from the Padres, I believe it is. Something like I'm talking like double-digit $1 million still. Yeah.
Wouldn't it be amazing if, you know, you worked for a company for 6 months or a couple of years or whatever, and they basically came to you and said, you know what, you're just underperforming. You're performing much, much, much lower than expectations. But guess what? Right. You signed a 6-year contract for $20 million, so we're going to fire you, but you get all that money. Oh, and by the way, you can sign with someone else and basically have a double salary. I mean, it's the weirdest thing. Baseball is freaking weird, man.
Well, it's the players' union.
But I know.
With baseball, it's that strong players union, man. That is some unbelievable stuff that they get locked into.
It's just incredible to me. These guys, I mean, they can sign a contract based on previous performances, but then their future performance is shit. And whatever, it's guaranteed, and even if you get fired. It's kind of like, but it's similar with the CEOs, right? CEOs of companies like Marissa Meyer and all these others. You know, they always have these golden parachutes written into their contracts, and that's essentially what a guaranteed deal is. It's a golden parachute. It's like, it's guaranteed, man. So if you suck and you lose a lot, millions of dollars for our company, we're going to fire you. Oh, but you also get all these stock options and a $20 million bonus on your way out. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah, if the real world worked that way, nobody would be working.
No one would be working. Everybody would work two jobs and have enough money to retire on. I know. It's sad. So getting back to their second question mark, of course, is the bullpen. As we already detailed, four of the five losses they have now, they had a lead in. They have 3 blown saves, so they're 2 of 5 already. Oh, that's just, I mean, oh. Yeah. They already have almost 10% of their blown saves they had all last year. Yeah. That's not good, and they're like 5% through the season. A few other things. So when the team is ahead, we talked about this, ERA is 6.06, and that's over 32 and two-thirds inning, which ironically is the most innings pitched with a lead in the National League, which tells you the Giants have actually had the lead a lot of the time. They can't lead the National League in innings pitched with the lead and have 5 losses, except, you know, when the bullpen blows it late. So,
well, it's because they've been scoring runs and jumping out to leads in the games, and then it's the 6th, 7th, and 8th.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's the 6th, 7th, and 8th, right?
Yeah, so the ERA in that situation is second worst in the NL. They've also given up the most home runs, tied with the Padres, with 11. But 10 of those 11 home runs they've given up were given up when they had the lead, which is a contributing factor to that high ERA. So they get that lead, and they give up these gopher balls. Samardzija is very guilty of it in his last start, his only start, and he gave up 3 home runs after the Giants were leading. So this is a pattern the Giants need to break. It's not necessarily just the bullpen, but the staff in general cannot hold leads right now. 7th inning or later, they got a 5.49 ERA, 12th in the National League, so it's another indication that their late inning pitching performance is very subpar. While innings 1 through 6, they're 4.69, so quite a bit better. Although still 11th in National League, so
the best thing about all this is it's small sample size. It is just a week into the season.
All these numbers will change greatly in the next week or two. Absolutely, I totally agree with you. But just as a comparison with the left fielders, who are hitting 069 with the Giants, center fielders are 143. So they're kind of like, thanks, left field, you're making us look good. Seriously. And then right field, which is primarily Hunter Pence, hitting 265, which is fine. Nothing too bad about that. So yeah, left field is the glaring hole right now. You know, I wanted to look at a little bit of their situational hitting as well. Not necessarily just from left field, but runners in scoring position. That was another weakness the Giants had in the second half last year. They were awesome in that in 2014, remember?
Yeah, they were doing it. They were doing it two outs and runners in scoring position.
Oh, two outs
and
runners
in scoring.
They were freaking fantastic. They were unbelievable. And yes, small sample size, get it. But again, when you kind of are looking for these things and they're coming to fruition in the first week of the season, they're just a little bit more amplified, a little more magnified, yeah. You know? And so far, they're 13 of 64. That's a 203 clip with runners in scoring position. That's 12th in the National League. But with two outs and runners in scoring position, they're even worse. They're 4 of 28. Again, small, but it's 143, 13th in the NL. And then on the flip side, their pitching is giving up a 277 batting average with runners in scoring position. So it's one of those things where, you know, if you're going to have a low batting average with runners in scoring position, you want your pitching to be doing the same thing to the opposition. So you're kind of equaling things out. But it's not good when the other side is hitting 70 points higher than you with runners in scoring position. So just taking opportunity of those runners a little bit more often than the Giants are. So.
Well, it was the same type of thing. I remember they were 1-10 on opening day. It was indicative of just not jumping when the opportunity is right. Like, I'm wondering where the runs would have come from today if the Diamondbacks hadn't have been dumbasses. I mean, like, really, where would the runs have come from? They might have won 2-1. But it wouldn't have been a 4-1 thing. Yeah, and they had to manufacture the run that they got. Mm-hmm. Pence hit a double and then tagged up on a fly ball to deep center and then tagged up on a fly ball to deep, deep right, a ball Crawford hit that would have been out in any other park.
Oh, crushed that right in front of the 421 sign, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, they manufactured the one other run. So, you know, I wonder where they would have been without the runs thrown in today. But to be fair, like, Walker was wildly effective today, and they didn't have as many opportunities.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, the offense, it seems to click, but it doesn't get that final push right now.
It doesn't, yeah. I'm not going to say they're in horrific shape right now, but the timing is not very good. They're just not... Not timely. Thank God they had the runs thrown in today, because you're right. I mean, it could have been a 1-1 game going into extra innings if they didn't get those three runs, or maybe a 2-1 win at the best. So thank you, Diamondbacks. By the way, every time they in KMBR, they say Giants versus D-backs tonight at 7:15. I'm always hearing D-bags. I'm just saying.
I'm hearing it too.
It's like, man, that's just an unfortunate nickname. The D-bags. All right. So we're down to who's hot. Who's hot? We got a lot of hot players right now. We really do. I mean, that's what's crazy. They're 3-5. If you looked at this who's hot list, I'd say the Giants are above 500 right now.
Yeah,
but
they're
again,
scoring
I think
runs.
That's indicative of they're playing close games. They're just blowing them late. So you have a lot of contributors to this team right now. We just have a few glaring holes in left field in the bullpen. But Cueto, up until today, he had both of the Giants' wins. He's shimmying and shaking with the best of them, and he's looking really good. So he's doing really well right now. Crawford hitting 367, of course. He's got a bomb now. And we talked about this in the season preview. You and I both think that he has a really good shot at being, you know, the only guy to maybe crest 20 home runs this year, which he's done in the past, so it's not like it's crazy to think that. But he just seems to be coming into his own, and it's a swagger, it's a maturity thing, you just kind of see the confidence at the plate, and we may be totally off, but clearly other people saw it, and they selected him to WBC, he's getting gold gloves now, I mean, he's getting the recognition, and I think he's a modest enough guy that's not going to get to his head, but it's giving him the extra confidence he needs to just take it to that next level, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised if this year hits 20 bombs, hits 280, knocks in 90. Real solid shortstop, you know? And obviously potentially wins another gold glove.
I wouldn't be shocked if he does better than that. Honestly, if he's an MVP candidate, It wouldn't surprise me. He seems to square up balls so much better this year.
He does. He's squaring them up. That's a perfect way to put it. He's not ahead of it. He's not leaning. He's not a little behind. He just seems to be timing that torsion perfectly, and he's just
You watch that moment of contact, and his body is so quiet coming through it, and you see his arms are perfectly extended, that his weight is perfectly balanced at the point of contact, so he's putting himself in a good position. Like, I'm never nervous when Crawford's at the plate, you know? Like, Pence sometimes, you know, he's not doing too well, and you're like, eh. Belt sometimes, you know, he's streaky. Right now, Crawford, every time he's at the plate, I expect that he's going to give a fight and probably put the ball in play.
Yeah. Yeah, he it's amazing. He can hit a ball, you know, 410 feet and get out.
Yeah, right. Getting out.
I know, getting out, you know, that's way out of here in Arizona, but good for him. Okay, Joe Panik, he's looking good. I was a little concerned about him last year, but he started off the season reassuring all of us Giants fans for at least a little bit. 348 and playing solid defense. Bum, good pitching. He's had a couple of hiccups, but overall a 3.0 ERA, and of course he has those both bombs opening day, and he's just looking fearsome at the plate. Matt Moore. Two starts, but today was a stellar one. One run over eight innings, so he's got a 2.7 ERA. Looking great. And then Eduardo Nunez hitting .323, but more importantly, he's been flashing his speed out there. He's got four stolen bases already, tied with a National League lead. And you know,
I think he had one today.
Oh, did he have one later today?
I think he had one today. I think that makes five.
He might be at five then. Okay. Yeah, I missed some of today, so maybe I missed that, but... He's looking.
He's looking great.
I mean, if that's five stolen bases in eight games, I mean, that's my God. I mean, this guy. I know he stole 40 last year in both leagues combined, but he might be stealing 45-50 for the Giants here, sir. That'd be pretty insane.
Damn, I was wrong. I could have sworn he stole a base today. Look
okay,
at this.
Well,
Giants still. Giants were 0-for-11 with runners in scoring position today.
I did know that because they were talking about it when. That sacrifice fly was hit later in the game by Crawford because when he stepped up to the plate, they said they were 0-for-10 with runners in scoring position today. And he hit that and he said, well, that doesn't count as an at-bat. It does drive in a run, but they're still 0-for-10.
Yeah.
Okay, but still, four stolen bags. He's playing well.
Yeah, he is.
We'll see what's going on.
You know, I was wondering, the two guys that jumped out, Nunez and Panik. Panik's starting to hit his way up the order a little bit. He's gone from eighth to at least seventh. I'm not sold on Belt in the two hole just yet. And I could see Nunez and Panik taking over the top of the order within like the next month. Nunez seems to, you know, get on. He's streaky like every other leadoff type. Seems to be,
sure.
But when he gets it going, he gets on, he mixes it up, and Panic's been making solid, consistent contact, and he's hitting himself, you know, up the order if he can. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see the two of them kind of work their way up. Span's been okay when he's healthy. When he's healthy is the problem, though. He's got to be healthy. So, you know, having a rotating door in both left field and center field is frustrating enough. So it'd be nice to have some stability at the top with like Nunez, Panic. You know, Belt, I know, three home runs, but I'd rather still see him in the five or the six.
Yeah, he does say he likes the two hole, and I don't know how much credence that will have on his performance throughout the year, but he does like that spot. But I think they're going to experiment a little bit more. Bochy's, you know, he's not settled on where everyone's going to be playing.
No, so not yet.
That bodes to be seen. Who's not? We already talked about it.
Yeah.
Guys left field in the bullpen. It was really... I'm not going to call out individuals unless you want to. We already mentioned the unmentionables. You
know, it's funny. It sounds like we're blaming the bullpen and left field for all five of their losses.
And we're not. When,
no. I mean, it's true, but we're not. And it's – no, I mean, it really isn't. It's a combination of things like that. But those are just – you know, those being the two glaring holes tells you how good this team really is overall. The offense has been clicking, scoring like 5.5, 6 runs a game. Things look good, even though they're a 3-5 team.
Yeah, 3-5. It's funny because, you know, when they were 1-5, people were already jumping ship, and other people had to remind them, you know, every team loses 5 out of 6 throughout the season. It's just that when they do it at the beginning of the season, the record says 1-5 instead of 36-34. You know, it just
like
it looks
there's
different.
Teams, yeah, there's teams out there that, you know, go off to rip roaring starts that are like 10-2 and 12-4 and stuff like that. And then by the end of the season, they've only won, you know, 70 games.
Yeah, does anyone really think that the Arizona Diamondbacks or the Colorado Rockies are going to be in first place?
No.
At the end of the year? I mean, no, come on, people. We also have the Cincinnati Reds and the Twins and other teams. It's just not going to happen, guys. No. Yeah. So that's baseball for you.
It is. People, it's just a small sample size.
It's what have you done for me lately? And they always think, oh, look at this past week. Oh, the Reds are definitely going to be central contenders. Now watch, they will be, and I'm going to eat crow, but can't happen. Well,
the Giants get to do something about it. I mean, they got a week to at home to try to get back to 500. You know, if not, just have a winning homestand. Because if they can go 5-2 on this homestand, they're right back at 500. Everything's even back out. You know, they go back on the road again after that. But it's just kind of you're back where you are. You know, just stay afloat for the moment.
Yeah. The upcoming schedule, they got two more against Arizona, both night games, and then four against the Rockies through Sunday, and the next Monday's an off day when we record again, so we'll be coming back at you after another six games, and like you said, if they're, let's say, 4-2 in that time, that puts them at 7-7. Ooh, that's a good drink, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right, 4-2, and they're suddenly back at 500, so it's not that big of a deal right now. We didn't really address the other guys in the room right now, but you know, Jeff Samardzija, of course, giving up his bombs. But what did you think about Matt Cain? Was it pretty much what you expected?
Yeah, I mean, there's no other way to put it but that. It was pretty much what I expected.
And yeah, it was almost like right what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah, and that's fine for now. We'll keep seeing what's happening. I suspect he's going to have a gem of a game, make everybody think, you know, but... I don't mean his next start. I just feel like one of these times he's going to twirl something and it might buy him some time and it might get frustrating.
Yeah, you know, we were talking about how many starts is it going to be until he's out of the rotation. And we were talking about kind of over under 5 or 6 or whatever. And
right.
I definitely thought it was going to be more than 5. But he's one of those guys. I think it's going to be like a video game when you're low on health. And you find that life stone somewhere in the corner, and it just makes your game last another minute. And then you find another one, and your game lasts another minute. Like you said, he's probably going to twirl a gem somewhere in there, so he's probably going to have like 3 or 4 bad starts. He's going to be closing in on the end of his rope. The public's going to be all over Bochy about the change, and then he's going to throw, you know, 7 innings, 1 run, right? And then people are going to go, oh, wow. And then I'll, like, buy him another start or two, you know?
Right,
if he continues on that ledger, you know, he could end up having, like, 9 or 10 starts before he finally gets removed. But, I want the guy to succeed so bad for so many reasons, not just the Giants, but just personally. I just don't understand, you know, the Giants can't afford loss after loss after loss after loss if that's what happens with the guy.
Right.
At some point, they're going to have to cut their losses, literally cut their losses, and move on with someone else, like a Ty Block. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. I'd like to give him a couple more goes at it. I mean,
oh, sure. Sure. But, you know,
this year.
If he's got a 6 ERA after 5 starts, I mean, is Bochy really going to sit there and think, oh, I'm going to give him another 3? I mean, you know, it's like, how much do you need to see? You know, after last year and the year before that, it's a common theme. There's been 1 or 2 starts in there, but other than that, it's been inconsistencies.
Yeah, it's a body that really just kind of failed him at this point. That's really all you can say.
I know. He always used to call him the horse, too, because he was never injured. He would routinely throw 95 miles an hour, made the most starts, had the most innings pitched. You know, he was just like the $6 million man. He just kept going and going and going. But I guess age is finally catching up with him. Not that he's old.
Yeah. Guess that other $14 million didn't buy anything.
Yeah, no. It's unfortunate.
No, I know that sounded bad, but it is. It's bad with seeing that happen. I hope he has a good home start for his first home start, because I'd love to be surprised. I'd love to see him hit some sort of stride or some pitches click in. You know, it's just we don't sound hopeful. It's like everything we talked about last week that we were not hopeful about, left field, bullpen, and Matt Cain, it all came true this past
it
week.
It all came true this week. We need to be on MLB Network, right? Or at least yeah. CSN Bay Area. I'm talking with Rich Aurelia and Tim Flannery and those guys.
Yeah, or just pay me to do Chris Russo's show on MLB Network. And that guy is so, you know,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He's just wired all the time with his hands flying everywhere. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I moved my hands when I was imitating him. Yeah, absolutely.
Did you?
Yeah.
I know he's a Giants fan, but man, whew.
Yep.
A little over the top. All right. So I think that's going to do it for episode 118. Yeah, we got 2 more versus Arizona, 4 versus Rockies. So we're really going to try and stick on this weekly schedule. I know that Eric and I really enjoy it. Right. I know that Willie and Ben had other things going on tonight, but they're going to be joining us for the most part throughout most of the season. So look forward to them. You can follow us collectively at TortureCast on Twitter, or individually, myself at ChadK21. You can also follow Eric at 2OutHits, that's with the number 2, and the aforementioned Ben at FriedDuck with 2 Ds, and Willie at WillieDills. Check out our Facebook page and like it there, TortureCast on Facebook, and we have a YouTube channel. We don't post a lot of content there, but we have a lot of historic content, a lot of interviews, video interviews over the last 3 or 4 years. From Media Day and a few other little morsels. However, I am playing with ideas on bringing the podcast more to a live stream / video recording if we can do so. We have to overcome some technical hurdles, but I think that could be some fun as well. Hmm. Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Eric's like, what? I don't know what you're talking about.
No, I'm and stroking my beard.
Yeah. There, see, and you would be able to see that on video if we had it, and you'd understand how much Eric was thinking right now. So
yes.
I think this is a good thing.
The faraway look.
And don't forget to check our articles and podcasts out on torchcast.com. Eric, do you have anything to pimp?
No, just hopefully good Giants baseball next time we meet back here next week.
Yes. All right. Well, for Eric, this is Chad signing off, and hopefully Ben and Willie will be back next week. Until then, may the Giants get back to 500. We'll see you next week. A-boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TortureCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.